You're listening to Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
On June 5th, Enbridge announced that it had signed equity ownership agreements with 60% of the First Nations along the proposed BC-Alberta route of the Northern Gateway Pipeline. Spokesperson Paul Stanley said 23 First Nations have signed on. Art Sterrett says those figures are a sham. He is Executive Director of Coastal First Nations. That's an alliance of First Nations along BC's north and central coast and Haida Gwaii. Art Sterrett joins me by phone this morning. Hello, Art.
Good morning.
Now, why do you say those figures are a sham?
Well, I check the numbers. All of the First Nations from Prince George West right out to Haisla, and the Karyosakini Tribal Council, the Inca Dene, and the Lake Babine Band, and the Wet'suwet'en and the Morristown. And out of that group, I found that there were only two who'd actually signed equity agreements. I was actually on an interview a while back as well, and the chief of Burns Lake was on there. He's one that they had signed an agreement, but they hadn't made up their mind whether they were supporting the project yet. They were just kind of signing on as a way to make sure that they didn't miss out on it, because Enbridge had put a deadline on it. So part of the problem is that Enbridge is, they're exaggerating who actually is supporting the project based on signing agreements. And the other side is most of the people that actually signed agreements are outside of the pipeline route. So I know of four others that Enbridge claims have signed equity agreements in the north, but those four are outside of the pipeline route. They don't have rights and title on the route, and thus they're not going to be in a position to decide one way or another whether this pipeline goes ahead.
I heard the interview with Al Jarrow of the Burns Lake Indian Band, and so he has signed an agreement, but the agreement is not going to come into force unless he gets approval from his band members. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, and that's a responsible way to do it. One of the problems that we have with this whole process, though, is that Enbridge is somehow trying to change the law. What they're telling First Nations along the route is that there's a timeline on consultation, and there isn't. If a project, in the next decade or so ends up going ahead, it doesn't matter if you sign an equity agreement now or if you signed one a month ago or you never signed one. The law says, if you're going to impact the First Nation, there has to be an accommodation, and there's no timeline on that. So Enbridge was pulling a few tricks on First Nations by saying that there's a deadline for accommodation, and that's actually against the law. So they were deceiving the First Nations along the route, and that's just not right. So
even the people who actually have territory on the route are being deceived by Enbridge. But then, in addition to that, they're including people who you say don't have Aboriginal title. For example, the Métis. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, the Métis. Certainly, everybody recognizes that the Métis have rights. Everybody has rights, and there are a lot of the Métis that they hunt and fish and that with the local First Nations, but the Métis themselves will tell you that they don't have any land, and they certainly don't have any land along the route. And so for Enbridge to sign an agreement with the Métis Nation to approve a pipeline is a bit deceiving. The BC Métis Federation has canvassed or polled all of their locals, and they say that over 90% of them are actually opposed to this project. And I have had many, many calls from Métis people who have said what the Métis Nation did was wrong. It was an insult to the First Nations along the route, and that the Métis didn't feel it was proper that they come out and do this.
So in a sense, there's a split within the Métis community, and there was also a split in the Gitxcan community between chiefs who signed and people who didn't want to sign. Is that something that's happening in a number of nations?
Well, I mean, you know, the Coastal First Nations did, you know, many, many years of research on oil and pipelines and tankers, and, you know, what we found in the Gulf of Mexico, what we found in Alaska, is that when oil comes into an area, one of the things that they do to try and have their way is they divide people. And so this is par for the course. You know, Enbridge has obviously divided the Métis. They have divided First Nations along the route by including some that aren't on the route. And indeed, the most dramatic one was when they signed an agreement with one person from the Gitxsan. All of the chiefs subsequently came in after and told their chief negotiator that this agreement was not acceptable to them. Now, the Gitxsan have told Enbridge that they are not going to be part of the agreement. But Enbridge says, too bad, you signed and you're staying with it. So obviously Enbridge wants to continue to divide the Gitxsan people, which is unfair. But that's what oil does. So, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. Enbridge will do whatever it can to divide First Nations. It will do whatever it can to divide British Columbians. And all of the false ads that they're putting out there right now are intended to do that. So they're trying to paint a good light on what they're doing. You know, they don't want us to know that, you know, Enbridge itself, their pipelines have, you know, 60 to 70 spills a year. They don't want us to know that every 1.5 days in Alberta there's a spill somewhere. They don't want us to know that they spilled, you know, 500,000 liters of oil on the Kalamazoo. And, you know, they don't want us to know that there's a 250,000 liter spill in Alberta right now. They, you know, the premier of Alberta comes out and makes it sound like this is some kind of an unusual occurrence by having a spill there. But the reality is there are spills every 1.5 days in Alberta. And, you know, Alberta wants British Columbia to become their sewer. You know, they are defacing their land in Alberta with oil. And British Columbia has a sustainable economy. You know, it's not in the greatest shape. You know, the world is having a tough time, but we're in better shape than most. You know, we don't need to bring oil with the potential to wipe out the salmon runs, to defile our water. You know, we in British Columbia are self-sufficient, and we don't need to subject ourselves to an industry that is non-renewable and that has no respect for the environment. We've learned just recently that Enbridge has been fighting with the Department of Fisheries and Oceans now since 2010, and they lobbied the government something like 40 times last year, and as a result of that, we are now getting Fisheries Act changes to allow them to do whatever they want. They have no respect for water. They have no respect for rivers, and they couldn't beat the rules that were in place, so they've got the government to change them, and we saw all that in Parliament this week. So we're in for a big battle in British Columbia, but we're up to the challenge. British Columbians and First Nations are not going to allow this to happen. And the one thing that British Columbians can take heart with is the fact that all of these laws that were changed in Ottawa have not changed the Aboriginal rights and title of First Nations in British Columbia. And we will use those rights to make sure that the environment that British Columbians respect and cherish are going to be there for future generations.
What is the dollar value of the equity agreement that Enbridge is offering?
Well, they're saying that it is 10% of the project. That to me is a real joke as well. I mean, the Mackenzie Valley pipeline, for example, is 33%. You know, the other pipeline, Pacific Trails, that's an LNG pipeline that's heading for Kitimat. The equity agreements for First Nations, and there are 30%. So what Enbridge is doing is an absolute joke. I mean, even if First Nations found this project acceptable, the equity agreements that they're offering are a joke. You know, they're they're less than a third of what is what's been negotiated in other areas, and Enbridge, through their trickery, has caused First Nations to think that there's some kind of deadline and accommodation, and have gotten a few people to sign up. By the way, I think that even those along the pipeline, despite the fact that they're against this, you know, some of them are in tough shape. They've lost jobs. You know, they've had mills burned down. The forest industry is in tough shape as a result of the pine beetle, and they're just trying to cobble together a new economy. And so, Coastal First Nations is looking at non-renewables as well as some, you know, an LNG to see whether or not somehow non-renewables can help support the renewable industry. Enbridge isn't trying to do that. Enbridge just wants to bowl their way through here and do whatever they want. And they know that their industry is going to jeopardize everything that we do in British Columbia, but they really don't care.
What kind of jobs are going to be created? I know they talk about 15% of jobs going to First Nations people. What kind of jobs are they?
Well, they're Enbridge is saying that they are making room for First Nations to get 15% of the jobs, but they're very careful to say that that's only in the construction phase. If it was the permanent jobs, they're saying that there might be 500 jobs all across Canada created by this pipeline. And there might be a couple hundred in British Columbia. So if First Nations, even if they did offer 15% to First Nations of the permanent jobs, that would only be 30 jobs. So, I mean, it's a joke to think that somehow this is going to solve the unemployment problem that's running rampant on First Nations territories. Enbridge exaggerates their numbers when they say 500 and they stretch that all across Canada. I would assume that probably most of those are in their head offices in Toronto and Calgary and places like that, or Houston, wherever their offices might be. But they really aren't offering anything. You know, on the coast of British Columbia, there are 30,000 jobs that depend on a healthy environment, that depends on the ocean being able to continue to provide salmon and halibut and black cod and crab and shellfish and everything else. One spill, and that's over. $2.5 billion of revenue a year on the coast of sustainable development, and that's growing. That isn't even counting the 12,000 jobs in the sport fishing and tourism industry. You know, there are ships that go up and down this coast. You know, people look at BC as being pristine, and they come to the coast and they go to the interior, and it's all one package. And so if you defile one part of the province, you really do take away the majesty of British Columbia and just make us another dumping ground.
Now, it's no secret that the Conservatives passed Bill C-38 in order to facilitate getting the oil from the tar sands out to the coast. But you say that's going to make no difference.
It won't make any difference. There's nothing that they have done in Parliament that changes Aboriginal rights and title. And we're up to the challenge. You know. One of the things that we're doing in British Columbia, we have rewritten the law around rights and title. British Columbia is unique in Canada. There have been very few settlements in for title, and Aboriginal rights and title exist almost throughout the whole province. First Nations are being supported by the lawyers that helped us do that, and many of them, because of how they see the bullying tactics of the feds, they know that we don't have a lot of money, but most of them are now saying that they're going to work for us pro bono. So we have, we're not concerned about having to raise too much money. Obviously, we'll need some resources, but the reality is, if we don't raise any, we're still going to be up to the challenge, and we don't have to raise a whole bunch of money to fight these guys. We have so many people in Canada and British Columbia that are willing to support us that we're going to take this all the way to the Supreme Court if we have to.
It's been good to talk to you this morning, Art.
Thanks for calling.
I've been speaking with Art Sterrett. He is Executive Director of Coastal First Nations.